Fun fact, Iranian cuisine benefits from the influence of all the different cultures and ethnic groups in its melting pot. So they have a lot of different herbs that are used for seasoning. I just like to talk about food, which is why I chose this fun fact. They have fruits such as plums, prunes, pomegranates, apricots, and raisins. And Iranian caviar is also famous, apparently. So I always like cuisines that are just basically because they're in an area where there's like so many different influences over the course of history and stuff like that.
Yeah, because people are passing through and
Yeah. I've never had like
Iranian
actual
food.
Iranian food before. That would be
Me,
interesting.
I don't know if I've had it. I feel like I haven't. Just because I can't even name a
I
single
can't.
item because I'm uncultured.
Yeah. Same. Hi! I'm Leanne.
I'm Tammy.
And you're listening to Incrimination.
Wee.
Woo! We didn't do the beep 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 this time, so I was just like,
I
what
switched it up.
sound?
I switched it up.
Yeah, we're we like to keep it funky fresh in here. Oh man.
Uh-oh, that was not very
No, it
funky
wasn't
fresh of
funky
you.
fresh, it was I'm not funky fresh, honestly.
You're an oldie.
I am.
Housekeeping?
Yeah. I don't think we have anything to go through. Do you remember if
Our
anything?
anniversary is next week, or not next week, in 2 weeks. It's gonna be our anniversary
Yay.
episode. We're gonna do a case that's kind of close to our hearts,
Yes.
slightly relatable, but like not
Yeah.
really, but like a little bit.
A little bit, I think.
As a hint to what we're doing next.
Yeah.
Relatable as in we're second generation immigrants.
Yeah. I think that's the most relatable it gets, 'cause
Yeah.
the rest of it not so much, but I
Not
think
so
some of
much.
the themes behind it and the sentiments as well, like of being children of immigrant parents, probably a lot of people I think who might listen to us can also relate depending on what your background is, but yeah, that's a big hint.
Yeah. What did we talk about last week?
What was our case last week? What did I do? I can't even remember. My
Oh,
memory's so bad.
Inhwa school,
Oh, yeah.
Inhwa school. Yeah, so we did Inhwa school last week.
Or last episode, I
And,
guess. Since,
yeah.
yeah.
So this week I'm going to be covering the Tehran desert vampire, who I'm just gonna spoil it right from the start. This man murdered 20 young boys and men and one woman.
Holy shit.
Yeah. All of them aged around 7 years old to 25, and all of these murders occurred between 2002 and 2004.
That's a lot to do within like 2 years.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up what happened. But just as like a content warning, like this case does involve children as young as 7 years old. So if you are sensitive to that kind of stuff, I will be going into some of the details just as like to talk about his MO and give a better understanding of like what he typically would do. So if you're not ready to hear those kind of descriptions, like feel free to listen to next week's episode or next week's episode instead. We won't be hurt if you don't
Yeah.
listen to the children episodes.
We totally understand. So, yeah.
It's a tough topic, always, whenever children are involved.
Yeah.
Okay, this one I actually did not need a lot of, or maybe I should have done a few more articles, but the articles that I found were like hella long. And one of them I directly translated, like Google Chrome has that translation option. It was a really long article in a language I don't speak. And
Yes.
I don't remember what language it was in, but in a language that I don't understand.
Yes.
So if there are any like errors in my story descriptions or anything like that, that maybe if you are an Iranian listener or you know of this story, feel free to let us know, 'cause there's no way for me to properly check what those are saying, and I kind of have to just go off the translation and trust that they are correct.
Exactly.
But yeah, I didn't need that many because the articles that I found were really, really detailed. Two of them covering like the most of the case, one from Ekhtebar.com and the other one was from The Independent. And there's a few more articles in there that will be in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
But our main guy, the main villain. Yeah, the villain of the story is a man named Mohamed Bije, or Basije, I've also read. It's spelled out. So I tried to look up how to pronounce this, but I couldn't find any. I'm going to call him Bije, because that's my best guess, and I'm sorry to anyone who has that same name, or because I don't know how to pronounce it, but... Bije was born in February 7th of 1982 in Khorasan province near the Afghanistan and Turkmenistan borders in Iran. He was the oldest child of a huge family of 12, which included six of his half-brothers. At 3 or 4 years old, his mother passed away from cancer, and his father remarried immediately after. His father was extremely abusive. Some stories were that his father tied his feet together with chains, whipped him with a cane, and nearly killed him at least one time.
Holy shit.
Yeah. According to BJ, after a hard fight with his father, he hit himself with a brick in an attempt to take his own life.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So this guy did not have an easy upbringing. Even his stepmother was reported to be abusive and often beat him as well.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed to really enjoy school, but his dad made him drop out at the age of 11, and the family moved to Tehran to work in a brick kiln at the age of 11, as I said before.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, at this brick kiln, this is where BJ says that he was raped for the first time. And that was the trigger for a very violent life to follow. He started small. After being raped, he would find small animals and torture them to death. He later claimed that he only did it to weak and sick animals because he wanted to end their suffering, which is kind of something that he uses a lot throughout his you know, every time he's asked, like, why, he's like, oh, I wanted to put them out of their misery.
Yeah.
Another sad thing that happened was when he was 12 years old, he lost his close friend to suicide. So, like, by the time he was a preteen, he's already experienced a lot of abuse. He's been raped. Like, people around him are dying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of, like, the foundation that he had in his early life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't work alone. He also had an accomplice that was named Ali Baghi Gholampour. Not sure if I'm saying that right, but I'll just call him Ali because that's easier for me.
Yeah.
I think I'll also call him Mohammed. I know that's a very common name, but just for... I know I'm saying that at least a little right, so...
Yeah.
Ali and Mohammed. There's not much known about Ali himself. He claims he was sexually abused by his father as well as other men as a child, so he kind of sympathized, you know, and they kind of related to each other, and they got along. Ali was unfortunately a heroin addict and claims to have been coerced by Mohammed to help him kidnap the children. I'm not sure what Mohammed had over Ali that allowed him to manipulate him in such a way, but that is the claim. The victims of the crimes were not very well documented for several reasons. First of all, the crimes mostly took place in the slums of Pakdasht, a city of poverty about 25 kilometers southeast of Tehran. A lot of them were Afghan nationals that didn't have legal residency in Iran. So for that reason, a lot of parents didn't declare their children missing for fear of deportation.
Yeah.
Other victims were ethnic Kurds, which is a vulnerable minority in Iran.
Yeah.
Those individuals had recently migrated to the capital from eastern Iran, where they were originally settled, And they were also, like, not in good standing with, you know, the majority of... It's like a racism thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So throughout the case, the police were heavily criticized for allowing the two men to run rampant for nearly 2 years. And another big factor was that the area was in development. Like, it was, again, in the slums of Pakdasht. Mm-hmm. So police were uncertain as to who was responsible for the case since it spanned, like, the border of different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And they ended up just, like, pushing it off to each other, and therefore nothing got done. As for the actual crimes, the MO was that the men would ask the children if they wanted to hunt with them, saying that they would teach the children how to grab rabbits and foxes right from their burrows. This was an exciting opportunity because meat was a rarity at that time and place, so a lot of kids, you know, were pretty vulnerable to those kind of stories that they were making up. They also, mm-hmm. I think, were reporting that, or they also said that there were doves that were dancing in the sky or something, mm-hmm. something to entice children, you know. Although the methods were different for each victim, the children, once isolated, were murdered either by bludgeoning with bricks, strangulation, or by poisoning. They were mm-hmm. raped, and their bodies were usually burned. Any remains would be taken and buried in shallow graves, using some of the soil from the brick kiln to cover them. They would then kill cats or dogs and leave the corpses of the animals near the graves to decay so that people passing by wouldn't question the smell any further, which is Jeez. Grossly smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, Iran is like desert terrain. So the sun was hot and you just know that, like, the bodies were pungent.
Yeah.
For lack of better words.
Yeah.
Although we don't know the exact order of his murders, there were a few stories that did make it out, and a few family members that I'll mention throughout the case as they come up. He actually kept a notebook with the names and details of his victims.
That seems very fucked up. Like,
yeah, not.
Yeah. Do you know, I don't know if you're going to get to this later, but, like, do you know what he wrote in it in terms of the details, like their names, like what else did he write about them?
I think he wrote of, like, how old they were, if they were raped or murdered, and, like, how
so more of an ego thing for him of, like, oh, this is sort of what I did almost, and, like, that's so fucked up. It's like keeping a record. Wait, a record book of what he did. That's disgusting.
It's literally that, yeah. And the details of this book weren't published, but it did help, like, bring out a list of names. And according to Mohammed, the first victim that he ever encountered was an 8-year-old boy who was raped and murdered. His body was found a few days later. There was also note of the fourth victim, whose body was thrown into the brick kiln, which prevented the body ever being found.
Mm-hmm.
So despite all of the articles that I was able to find, like, there's a bunch of information, there isn't much mention as to how police and officials found out that it was Mohammed and Ali. Mm-hmm. The only thing mentioned was that an investigation was conducted after a large number of children appeared to be missing.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they investigated around 80 other suspects, including...
Holy shit.
Mohammed. And he was actually held by police for several months at one point.
Yeah.
But they released him due to lack of evidence.
Yeah.
And he went on to kill 7 more children after his release. The final arrest happened while Mohammed was watching children playing and swimming in a canal with binoculars.
Ew. Motherfucker, that's so gross.
Most definitely, he was looking for his next victim.
Yeah.
The owner of the brick kiln where Mohammed worked was also arrested and imprisoned, although his charges were not publicized, so I don't know anything about him.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, like, a slight sense of justice there because that guy probably raped him.
Yeah.
After his arrest, there was an internal investigation launched in the police force for releasing him the first time they had him. So they actually looked into that, investigating over 24 officers. Some of these officers were suspended for incompetence, which is rare.
That's a first. Not a first, but that's good. It is rare. I think that that's needed.
Rare and good. It took them around 200 hours of questioning before Mohammed finally confessed to the first murder. So only like 200 hours and he confessed to one. He revealed that the victim's body was left in a pomegranate garden. Authorities were able to retrieve the body of this victim. Eventually, it was also revealed that in addition to the 20 murders he committed, he raped 5 other boys, but they managed to avoid being killed. He was tested for chromosomal abnormalities at first, but he was then diagnosed with an acute personality disorder and maladaptation. According to Dr. Mohammed Reza Niko, he is a self-centered, punitive, monotonous, narcissistic, and skilled in arousing guilt and anxiety in others. His behavior is unpredictable and quirky and may be accompanied by strange sexual responses. He usually has an antisocial behavior that has led to frequent conflicts with the law, and he is significantly lacking in empathy and is inconsistent and impulsive. I think that's a pretty good summary of his issues.
That sounds about right. Yeah. And I think also, like, growing up in that household too, it just manifested in all of these issues.
Yeah.
Not that it's never an excuse. Like, it's an explanation of, like, sometimes, like, how that happens. But I think, like, you know, you don't have to fucking kill people.
Yeah. And I think maladaptation is, like a really good diagnosis, because as soon as he was thrown in a new environment, he was raped, he had to go to work, and he started killing. Like, those are clear signs that this guy is not having a good time. He couldn't catch a break, and it led to him having a lot of issues. So the trial, as you can imagine, was described as a spectacle. In total, 17 children between the ages of 7 and 21 were murdered. 6 young men were beaten and raped, but were somehow able to escape death. 2 men and 1 woman, each of them no older than 25, were also killed. 4 of them were actually found to be killed with cyanide, 3 of them with a knife, 7 of them were strangled, and 6 suffered a skull fracture. And those are, like, the cause of death that they described. The families of the deceased at the trial threw chairs at the defendants and attempted to attack them, causing the trial to be temporarily adjourned.
Yeah. Relatable.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Mohammed was described as cold and remorseless, and when asked if he was sorry, he just shook his head indifferently. So this guy's a freaking asshole.
Yeah. That's the whole thing with, like, the part where, of the diagnosis where he was just lacking in empathy.
Yeah.
Because I think that's also, like, when people lack empathy, that's a lot of the times not why they kill.
Yeah.
But it makes sense that they don't have any remorse for doing it.
And yeah.
They do it a lot.
It's so weird to, like, make sense of something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No, that's very true, actually. It makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. Like, what?
Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense to us, but it makes sense that it doesn't. I mean, like, it doesn't make sense to them. Therefore, it doesn't make sense to us.
Yeah.
What? Somebody can piece that together. Hopefully, you understand what we're trying to say. Mohammed said that the sight of blood made him euphoric. And I've read this in, like, several different articles. They all say that it made him euphoric. And it was reported that he attempted to eat one of the victim's legs just to see what it tasted like. Which is likely where he got the name the Desert Vampire. The Tehran Desert Vampire. Yeah. But it's also just from being a fucking predator.
Yeah.
You know, a monster. So he also brought up the animals that he killed when he was younger, saying that he was only ending the suffering of those children like he did with the animals back then. So of course this kind of made sense in that, you know, these children's...
Well, what did he think he was ending his their suffering?
Well, these children were living in poverty, yeah. Right? A lot of these children were vulnerable minorities. They were living in slums. Yeah. They, like, obviously were enticed by the idea of eating meat. Yeah. Like, they were living in poverty. He's like, oh, I'm just saving them, you know?
So fucked up. Sorry.
Yeah, it's super fucked up. I'm not justifying it by any means, yeah. But that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
So clearly they were guilty.
Yeah, but yeah.
Ali was only 22 at the time. Mm-hmm. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison for kidnapping, but that was it, since he allegedly did not participate in the actual murders. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at this, but he was also sentenced to 100 lashes for 2 counts of fornication. Mm. The article I read this from was Google translated. It could have meant rape, mm-hmm. but I have no way of confirming this mm-hmm. myself. But it said that it was for fornication.
Yeah,
he was also acquitted of complicity in the killings, which I didn't know was a thing you could be guilty of, but it kind of makes sense. But yeah, he was acquitted of that, and there was a lot of backlash and criticism for this call, but they went ahead with it anyway.
Yeah.
Another thing that I found interesting was that both of the men had cases filed against them on charges for corruption of the earth, which is directly translated, but I thought that was an interesting thing that you could, you know, get arrested for or charged for.
Maybe it's like corruption against like
humanity.
Yeah.
Perhaps yeah.
Because they're children, especially, right?
Yeah, that's true. They were both to be sentenced to death from these charges, mm-hmm. but their lawyers challenged the sentence at the Supreme Court and mm-hmm. it was overturned.
Great.
So Ali only was to serve the 15 years in prison.
And when was that?
Sorry, he was arrested on September 14th of 2004. Or mm-hmm. the both of them were arrested mm-hmm. in 2004. What was the question?
When were they sentenced? Because if he's serving a 15-year sentence, mm-hmm. so I'm curious when he gets out.
He was also sentenced in 2004. It was a pretty quick trial.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's pretty obvious these guys were guilty.
Yeah.
And the Iranian government handled it pretty quickly.
Yeah. We love efficiency. Always good to see when it comes to, like, court cases, I think. Not, like, always good to see, but I think when, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of blatant, obvious details and crimes, then, yeah.
Yeah. I'll get into it a little more later, but so mm-hmm. Ali was given 15 years in prison. So 2004, he is out.
He's out?
Yeah, I guess he's out.
2004, so it's 2019.
Yeah, he's out now. He should be out now. I haven't confirmed that, but yeah, he's 47 years old. Or he would have been 47 years old at his release, making him around 50 years old now. Hopefully he is living a different life than he was back then, especially without, you know, Mohammed leading him around and making him do his dirty work.
Exactly.
As for Mohammed, he was age 31 at the time of his arrest. He was given 16 life sentences. which I didn't know was possible.
Yeah, that's a lot of life sentences. Damn. Yeah.
And as well as some lashings mm-hmm. and a death sentence.
Oh.
Yeah.
So is he dead? So he got... it's always like, for some reason, I know it's such kind of overkill, but it's like, mm-hmm. here are 16 life sentences and the death penalty.
Yeah. It's like, what's the point of the life sentences? But I guess, like, just like you can just attach that to his name, like this is what he did kind of thing. A lot of the families were actually kind of upset with this because they said they would have rather been given blood money than having him executed. Because again, these were like poor families, right?
That's fair.
And they had already lost their child, and like, you know, I feel like money would have helped at least a, like it wouldn't have brought their child back, but it would have been helped them.
So they weren't given anything. They were just given like, oh, here, this guy's getting sentenced, like they didn't get anything else.
I read that four of the families did accept blood money, but I didn't know any of the details of like why it was only those four families, or I don't think anyone else got anything. Fazal Shamsi was the mother of a victim named Nematola, who was 12 years old when he fell victim to Mohammed's crimes. Fazal Shamsi, the mother of Nematola, who was 12 years old when he fell victim to Mohammed's crimes, she said that we had to sell all our things while we spent 8 or 9 months searching for our son. Aww. We've lost everything, and my husband has a bad back, making it hard for him to work. We would have preferred some money. That's, I don't know, that's just so sad to me. There's also a theory that Mohammed and Ali were used as scapegoats to hide an organ harvesting ring.
Jesus, fuck.
But judges dismissed this claim due to lack of evidence. But that would have been nutty.
It would be horrible.
Considering the execution of this man, which I will go through. On March 16th, 2005... two police cars patrolled the streets early in the morning of the execution and announced the event through loudspeakers, encouraging citizens to attend the execution. Yeah. This is like some weird... I don't want to say it's weird because it's, you know, a different culture, a different... But it's very odd to me and very theatrical and something that you would only see in American movies.
Yeah, because it feels weird, right?
Yeah.
I think like... because when you first mentioned that they were announcing it through loudspeakers, my next question was like, would you ever go watch? Because I don't think I would, even if it's something that like I really hated. Because I just, I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't.
Like, would you have gone to Ted Bundy?
I feel like I wouldn't, because you never know what's going to happen there, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, who knows?
Like, I don't know if like is a good enough answer.
Because, you know, it might also like depend on the friends that I have at the time. You know, if I was with some people who were like, yo, let's fucking go, I'd be like, hell yeah, let's fucking go. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to go. I'm like, yeah, it's a little freaky.
I feel like, because I remember seeing, I don't know if this was the actual, I don't think this was actual footage, I don't remember, but with Ted Bundy's, like, their crowds fucking outside. Some of them were just, like, fucking fans of Bundy, because, you know, like, everyone's like, oh, he's so hot, which is really fucking weird. But other people were there to cheer on him, like, dying and stuff, too, right?
So. Which is kind of, like, weird, too, like, why are you, like, as much, as horrible as he is, like, should we be parading his death, you know?
I'd rather not give him that satisfaction either, right? Like, just be like, cool, he's dead, fuck you, goodbye.
A crowd of over 5,000 people gathered, kept away from Mohammed by barbed wire and a thick line of security guards. Mohammed was led to a stage where they removed his shirt and tied his hands to a metal stake. He was lashed 100 times in front of the crowd, once crying out or making a sound, and only falling to the ground in pain a few times. Apparently, the crowd yelled and chanted harder, harder as he was being lashed, which is a little like, whoa.
That's a lot.
Ali Khosravi, whose son was the youngest victim of his crimes, was heard yelling, hit him harder, the bastard. Once the 100 lashes were complete, he was transported to a crane to be hanged, but not before being stabbed in the back by the 17-year-old brother of one of his victims, who managed to break through security.
Holy shit! Okay. I did not expect that part.
I was, like, so shocked when I read that.
Yeah.
Milad Kahani was the mother of one of his victims. She was invited to place the blue nylon noose around his neck.
Oh, this is so weird. It's actually, yeah, it feels like it turns into a public like spectacle for, that's yeah, so weird.
Yeah. So I don't know if you know like about hangings, but typically hangings, you drop them from a platform and death actually occurs from the victim breaking their neck.
Yeah.
That wasn't one of the situations. This was actually really cruel, and I was kind of like, I get it, but like, it's also like really horrible to me. But
yeah,
his body was lifted about 10 meters in the air where he slowly choked to death.
Oh.
Yeah, which is...
It takes a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
No. Yeah.
And as he was struggling in the air, it was said that one father yelled, "Dance and think of what you did to our kids."
Oh.
Which is like a really sad, horrible image to picture, but...
Yeah.
I won't post pictures of this because it's like, yeah, a little surreal to me, but there are photos out there of the execution. I did see them. It's just
yeah,
a little shocking to me, and I don't think it's even like allowed on Instagram.
Yeah, we would definitely be flagged for that shit.
Yeah. In Iran, public executions are rare, but this is pretty common procedure when they do occur. According to Sharif Fadl, who wrote the 2020 article about the case, which was the first article that I stumbled upon,
mm-hmm,
he said that his death was meant to bring catharsis to a city that suffered so much and still continues to live with an unspoken endless grief for the lives of so many children lost so senselessly.
Mm-hmm.
What was lost was immeasurable, but it is unclear what was gained by his theatrical execution, yeah, or if anything even changed in that poor city of Pakdasht.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, that's a good way of
I think that describing sums it up, right?
My exact thoughts. Yeah.
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 Because... I don't know if you're done, but that was sort of, like, where I wanted to, like, talk about, too. Because it's sort of... I get it that his crimes are very cruel. And I think there's always going to be debate, mm-hmm, about, like, the death penalty and things like that, yeah, too. And I think some people see that, you know, in... It's sort of, like, what your perspective of justice is.
Yeah.
That dictates, like, how you react and, like, how you view situations, mm-hmm, like this. I think, like, whatever it is, okay, he got the death sentence, that's, like, a thing, but I don't, I agree with that sentiment of, like, what was actually achieved through this,
yeah,
public sort of theatrics around his execution, because, like,
mm-hmm,
yeah, like, that, yeah, that's actually wild.
It just
wild.
Seems, like, unnecessarily cruel.
Yeah.
I understand people who want the death penalty, but I mean, at least in the U.S. and Canada, I don't think we do the death penalty anymore, do we?
There are certain states in the U.S. that still have it, I think.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's either by lethal injection.
Yeah, it's not like, and, you know, firing, yeah, range or
Yeah. Like firing, yeah, squad. I mean, even firing squad is like a quicker death than
this.
Slowly,
yeah,
hanging,
yeah,
and being choked to death. And like most people, when they're lynched, are, you know, dropped through the platform and, yeah, their necks break, and it's like an immediate death. Yeah. At most, like, it lasts 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But this was like cruel. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. But I think it had to do a lot too with just the amount of hurt and pain,
yeah,
that he caused. Like, this wasn't just the 20 people that he affected, it affected 20 families, right?
Yeah.
So that's like, say each family is, you know, 5 people, it's how many is that?
Five times 20, 100.
That's 100 people that are grieving the loss. And honestly, probably their families are even bigger than that, because, you, yeah, know, back then there wasn't much birth control,
yeah,
especially in this kind of environment where they don't even have the proper infrastructure to have a good police force. Like, yeah. These families are huge, and they're hurting, and they're poor, and they're angry. So, like, part of me, like, I get it, but also it's, yeah. like, you become the bad guy at the same time when you're, like, bringing on this much hurt on, like, a one human being. I guess it's debatable whether or not he's a human, but, you know.
Yeah, he's a vampire. But I think the other part, too, I moved on from that really quickly, but, because I think, you know, we're saying, like, this was an unusually cruel way to,
mm-hmm.
like, deliver and execute.
An execution.
I think the argument can be made, and I'm just, like, kind of, like, countering my own opinion about it. I think the argument mm-hmm. can be made that, like, his crimes were cruel, so the way that this execution was delivered was to match the severity of that, too. I think that, like, you can say that's also as well.
Fair, yeah.
Yeah. So... I don't know. You can't see my face, but, like, I've been cringing each time you, like, described it. I was like, oh, like, my face was just like,
Because, you know, normal people hear these horrible things happening to, like, anyone, and they're like, ooh, like, that's not a pleasant experience. I think that just comes with, like, human empathy that you have for someone, but I guess it really depends. Also, reminds me of I sent you this case on TikTok of that man. What happened to him?
So he was in India, and he just, like, raped a bunch of people, and then during his sentencing, or I don't remember if it was his trial or whatever, but he was basically stabbed so many times by the woman that he hurt, and, like, it was just a public sort of execution of this person.
And I was reading the comments on that TikTok, and it was really split. Like, some people are like, oh yeah, he totally deserved it, and other people are like, oh yeah, he was cruel, but does that make us better people to deliver that cruelty back to him?
Exactly.
I think it's, like, a very interesting topic, especially with, like, how, you know, public, 5,000 people is a lot of people to witness something like that.
Like, imagine being a kid being there, right?
Yeah.
And how that impacts you.
And you know there were definitely children there.
100%. Like, if you see something, and, you know, it's cruel and it's a violent way to to witness someone. Like, as a kid, you're seeing that. I feel like that's a lot to take in. Yeah.
I'm just about done. But
yeah.
So none of his family members wanted to claim the body.
RIP.
So he was buried in an undisclosed location after the execution. His family's home has since been abandoned, with the windows and doors broken by angry neighbors, as you might expect. And I will leave this with the list of the victims' names that was disclosed in the article that I read. Not sure where I messed up, but there are 21 names in this list, and I think one of them might have been, like, a survivor, but who was raped, and I'm not sure which one, so I apologize in advance, but, and I also apologize if I butcher these names, because I don't speak Persian.
Yeah.
But the victims were Syed Javad Hassani, Mohammed Reza Barbari, Masood Shidak, Milad Tamani, Mohammed Gadami, Nematullah Shams, Yunus Malaki, Baghi Nuri, Milad Damanpour, Mohammed Jafari, Hamid Jafari, Ehsan Zare, Ahmad Reza Kedri, Sajjad Sotoude, Vahid Amini, Avaz Eskandari, Keban Khosravi, Mohsen Khosrowabadi, Nemat Jafari, Mohammed Golamian, and Ali Nazari. So, apologies for the butchering of those names. I did my best. It's really hard to Google names in a language you don't speak.
Hopefully one day we have, like, enough listeners where we know, like, certain people, and we're like, hey, can you help us pronounce this? And, like, tell us how to pronounce this.
Oh, that'd be awesome if we had, like, a language team.
Yeah. Oh, that would actually be kind of cool.
That would be sick.
Add them to the Discord.
Yeah, if anyone speaks a bunch of language, or speaks a language...
other than English.
Confidently.
Yeah.
Yeah, an Asian language confidently. Feel free to DM us. Maybe we'll start a group chat.
Yeah.
And, like...
send voice notes to each other so that we can learn how to pronounce certain things.
That would be freaking awesome.
Yeah, because I think part of it, too, is, like, we recognize that, you know, Asia isn't just... a lot of our cases so far have been, like, sort of Southeastern Asia, but there's a lot of different countries within Asia, so...
Yeah.
We'll need some help with pronunciations of it.
Yeah, we are very limited to our Eastern and Southeast Asian knowledge.
Yeah.
But we're learning, and we hope that you are too, because that's kind of the point of this podcast, is to, you know, teach and share stories and acknowledge different cultural experiences throughout the world and bonds through true crime and the horrible things that happen in this world.
Yes.
But yeah, that's my case.
Thanks, Tam. So if you want to check out the few articles that Tammy mentioned, then you can go to our show notes at bit.ly/incrimination, all lowercase. And then make sure you check out our Instagram at incrimination. We won't post those horrible photos, but I'm sure you have other photos that you can post as well.
Yeah, I think there's some photos of Mohammed and maybe some of Ali, but I'll do my best with what I got. I don't think there's too many, because it is like a very poor area. There isn't much documentation of the victims or anything, so
that would make sense. So
yeah, and tune in next week for our anniversary episode. We are turning one. Thank you to everyone who has been following us along the way. We really appreciate it. It's been awesome doing this podcast, and I'll do some more blurbing next time. But yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Bye. Bye.